Okay, sorry about that. We're whatever, I guess. Neither one of us can lay blame. That's another side of technology, right? So, no, I was just interested in the idea of, you talk about, it seems like it's all about making decisions, making judgment calls, and that has to do with two things, right? Really, and all I can do is relate this to being a human being, because that's all I know. I mean, in my last life, I might have been a tea kettle, but I don't remember it. You know, you got your experience, which is all the stuff in your memories, which is all your stored data, and then you've got your sensory data. You've got what you see and what you can, and then you've got, you know, the a priori and everything else. Now, with a machine, with an artificial intelligence, presumably, there is some control on the part of the creator as to what information they give to them in the form of, like, experience. And then the more that the machine goes about and lives its life, I guess, you know, quotes on life, just to keep everybody happy. Are you still
there? Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. You were just snapping or something.
I'm cracking my knuckles. It's a bad habit.
Oh, yes, it is. You're going to have terrible... you're going to need to get cyberized at some point.
As soon as I can upload myself to the internet, I will renounce the American government, and I will become a citizen of internet.
The American government, or the United States of American government, or what?
United Nations. Humanity as a whole.
United Nations? The humanity as a whole? You'll renounce your people?
I'll renounce my people. I will declare internet citizenship.
And then declare martial law on the internet, and you'll just drive along like a virtual boss hog with the horns and everything. So that to me is kind of where we stand, I guess. It seems like I don't know, maybe if you had multiple generations of artificial intelligent robots, then you'd have the situation where you have a robot raising another robot. That could be an interesting idea, but
so you can't think about just stimulus response.
No, you can't. You have to think about programming, basically. You have to think about the collective experiences that are programmed into the machine, you know.
No, but machines can learn.
They can learn, and that has to do with time, you know what I mean? So that's also an age thing, just like with a person. And so then that's all built up. But usually what you have is you have, let's say, with the robot that knows its distance to keep from people, they program certain aspects of that into it.
Oh, yeah, that machine didn't learn. That machine was programmed to do what it did.
Well, is it capable of learning, or is it not? I mean, where do we stand with our definition of artificial intelligence? Is it programmed with, like, a fast and loose 30 to 20 centimeter distance for what safety safely away, and then it kind of bases itself on sensory input over an average of 2 years with different people, and it gets facial expression. Does it recognize those, you know, because someone looks at it, more people sneer at it when it stays at 15 at 21 centimeters, so it learns to back off,
right,
you know?
Right, so ASMO doesn't do that.
Yeah, that would be the next step up, I guess, right?
I mean, sort of. Nobody's really interested in making learning robots now. The robotics field is very, very divided. You build machines that do certain things, but you don't have a machine that can do everything. But you can build learning machines. So one way of building a uncontroversial learning machine is evolutionary robotics, where I don't know if you know anything about evolutionary robotics. But it
sounds like they threw evolutionary onto another term where it probably isn't correct, but that's the thing these days.
So the idea is that you write a program that's completely randomized, and then you have it run on a bunch of machines, and whichever machines do best at a certain task, by some standard, you let those machines reproduce in a certain way, replication with mutations. And then you have the second generation. You run those on robotics.
Well, how is the genesis of the mutation come about?
Random.
Just through a bunch of data, or is it sort of originally programmed into this random code or what have you?
So the code is randomized, and then mutations are randomized.
Okay, within the code already, I guess I have a trouble if it's already random, then, I mean, because a mutation is pretty much defined, like at least from a genetic standpoint, as being a differentiation from the norm. You know, a gene is this right. collection of base pairs, and which is not a random thing. And then if you put this base pair in place of
So it's just using the evolutionary structure, which is certain creatures of a population are successful. Those creatures are reproductively successful also, right?
That you're talking about population genetics. That makes perfect sense. I understand. You know, that which can use the device thrives and survives, and that which does not. And as such, you arise at a more intelligent machine, I guess.
More intelligent, you can put that in scare quotes also. It's just better at doing the task that it's being selected for. So one example, I have this up on my blog right now, is these little robots that wander around and their batteries drain. And there's one hub where if you're close to it, your batteries charge. And there's one hub that if you're close to it, your batteries drain faster. Right. So one of them is food and the other one's poison. And you can train using these evolutionary robotic techniques. You can train a bunch of robots to search out food and find it and go to it and stay away from poison. And these machines get better over the generations, right? They're really bad at it first, but over hundreds of generations.
In the context of generation, you're talking about just another brand new... Say the company that makes these machines they're using, are they making... You know, do they have 50 of these machines, and then they use 10 each test, a new generation is a new test? What does that really mean?
So this particular experiment, I think it was 10 machines, but their programs could all, you could reprogram them, right? And so they would have 10 different programs running on each of these different machines, and then they would take the successful ones, and they would reproduce that program, and then they would reprogram all the machines using the next generation.
Okay, so that's what they're doing then. Okay, I understand. That's how they're passing on, in almost a very Lamarckian kind of status, they're passing on the information through the genes.
Right.
The learned information through the genes.
Right, right. And so this technique will make machines that do better at certain tasks, right? If you're always selecting for the ones that are successful at the task, eventually you're going to have machines that are good at that task. So it's a very simple way of learning in machines, and this learning is importantly different from just programming the machines to do something, right? You don't have to sit there and write the code for what it does in each one of these different situations. You let the machine learn organically about how these situations arise and solve it on its own, right? And so what it does is importantly distinct from what the programmers intended.
Sure. Have they done that test though? Have they compared the end generation end, whatever it is, code with the code that just says go to food and compared where the differences are?
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, they're distinct. They're obviously distinct programs because the machines behave better, right? They can solve the task, right? So obviously the machines are doing something new, and they're doing something that the programmers did not explicitly program into the machines, right? So these machines are not just doing what the programmer said, right? They're not going to take over the world or anything, but they're importantly autonomous from their designers. They learn, and it's a genuine case of learning, right? They're changing in response to this task, right? The reason this particular study was interesting is because these machines were also social machines, right? So the little charging hub and the little poison hub, the food hub and the poison hub, there were 10 of these robots, but only 8 of them could fit around the little hub at a time, right? And so it was in the interest of the little robots to find the food quickly. They were also social robots. They could signal to each other. So they had little flashing lights, and the lights would flash if they were near food or if they were near poison, right? And the other robots would learn to follow robots that were near food and stay away from robots that were near poison, right? And the reason
there's a lot of variables going on right there. Then they can incorporate. There's not just a binary good and bad program. There's a quickest to the food, and then there's a sort of slow to the food program, right.
And there's also this social dynamic, right, where they're signaling to each other, they're reading the signals off each other, and there's a competition between the individuals. And the reason this study was interesting is because they discovered that some of the machines would lie. They would signal that they were near poison when they were near food, so that way none of the other robots would come and take away its charge, right? So they would deceive the other robots, which is
So you're saying that they had greedy machines then?
Right, they had greedy, deceptive machines.
Right.
Now I'm just talking about robots. I forget what we were talking about, or how this related to Terminator.
The whole thing does it has to do with the nature of, you know, programmable intelligence and behave passing for human.
Right. The claim is simply that, look, these machines learn, and what we mean by learning is just as they're importantly independent of what the programmers did to them in their original creation.
Did they have it set up so that the programming of successive generations was done through some sort of an automated system where the programmers were not even involved? I mean, were humans involved in anything other than just sort of getting this ball rolling?
No, they were really just involved in getting. I mean, it would mess it up if they were interfering in the successive generations, right? In order to keep the test.
Yeah. So that part was under control.
Right.
But I'm wondering about the actual programming. Was the reprogramming, or, you know, like I said, the programming of the successive generations, was that actually just done by people?
I'm not sure. I have to read the study more. I'm guessing. I mean, because you have to run these for thousands of generations before they actually.
Yeah, and there's a lot of variables there too that they would presumably be, if they're trying to do good hard science, would be, you know, adjusting one at a time and so on and so
forth. Right, right. I mean, this is sort of recent work in robotics, and they've been doing this for 15 years at least, right? So they know how to program little machines and get them to do the right sort of things. But the point is that they're importantly independent of designers' intent, right? So maybe these machines aren't the best example of it, but it's not hard to imagine a case that's like that.
Well, I think I see what you mean. I mean, the best point at which they're independent of the designer's intent, I mean, is in the ones that are deceptive, I guess. I can see no reason why someone would design a machine to tell other machines to not get charged up. You wouldn't want that, like, you know, say I'm you know, Owen Lars, and I'm working on the moisture evaporator, and I got all my droids going. I would want all of them to know about how to get charged up so that I could just let them go. I wouldn't want one to lie to the other ones. That would be, you know, certainly not something that I would want. So I could see that angle of it for sure.
So the philosophical point here is that you don't need to give a definition or a set of criteria for when something is genuinely intelligent or like a human being or indistinguishable from a human being. None of those things matter. What really matters about artificial intelligence is just the autonomy, is just the independence. And the independence is really easy to get. All you need for independence is learning, right?
Are you hand-waving with your, those other definitions don't matter? Or are you, I mean, did you establish that?
They don't matter in the sense that they don't get at what this discussion of technology is about. This discussion of technology is about the independence, the autonomy, right? The fact that these machines are making judgment calls that we don't have control over, right? And that question is not settled by solutions to the question, you know, what is intelligence? What is consciousness? What does it mean to be human? What does it mean to be alive, right? I'm not saying that those questions aren't important. I'm not saying that those questions aren't important, but I'm saying that the question of technology here is not settled by those questions. The question of technology is, how do we deal with the independence of machines? How do we deal with the possibility?
And the question of intelligence is not answered by the solution of autonomy through technology.
Right. Yeah, so it works both ways.
Yeah, it has to.
Right. So this is why I think the question of technology is interesting, and I think robot movies sort of hit on this, but there's never been a sustained discussion of exactly this sort of aspect of technology, even though it's what I think lies behind a lot of these discussions. I also don't think philosophy has been very good about talking about technology in these terms also. But I can talk about that more another time.
Well, I mean, I can kind of tell you why. I mean, not trying to be too cynical or too harsh, but it's it's kind of straightforward. It's kind of, I mean, it's populate. At its heart, even if you relate it to something that's biologically relevant, it's population genetics. Which, I mean, sitting in my population genetics class years ago when I was in college, that whole thing is it's dry by necessity, and it's there are other concepts that are tangential to that and that sort of circle around that are, where all the philosophy and all the storytelling and drama and stuff sort of seems, in terms of like a movie and all that kind of stuff are kind of there. But just the straight up, these people, this thing dies, this thing doesn't, this thing survives, this thing doesn't. It's all very, very, very cut and dry. So,
I don't know. I'm not so sure about that. I think a lot of it just has to do with our fascination with human beings. We want to know about ourselves, and we really don't want to know about the environment that we're in, including the technological environment, right? We have an extraordinary poverty of understanding of technology, even though it affects our lives so immensely, right? And the best we can do to have these discussions is to have discussions about things that are very, very close to what we are, like robots, right? That look a lot like us, right? That we can relate to on some...
Well, we're very egomaniacal for the most part, like you said. People are interested in people.
And part of that's egomania. Another part of it is just sort of ignorance and lack of imagination, lack of fucking thinking on our part.
Was that imagination, or is that just reason? Is that just scientific observation? I mean, imagination is sort of in the touchy feely realm that I don't think is beneficial in any sort of discussion about, like you said, becoming educated about what technology does and how it operates.
It's lack of imagination in the sense that it's a lack of being able to see beyond your fucking immediate purposes, what you're doing in the moment. Right. Well, when I get in my car and I obey all the rules of the road in order to get to the grocery store, I'm thinking about the omelet that I'm going to make when I get back and have fresh vegetables. I'm not thinking about the internal combustion engine, right? Or the government bureaucracy that installed the traffic lights on the road, right? But these are things that profoundly affect my behavior. They shape what I do. They shape my very existence.
And once you're aware of that, is that something you need to belabor by dwelling on it? Or what is this criticism that people are impoverished or disenfranchised by not constantly thinking about the bureaucracy that's holding them up in traffic while they repave the road and such.
Not holding them up, but letting them do what they need to do, right? I wouldn't be able to, there wouldn't be grocery stores if there weren't a system of traffic laws that allowed people to get to grocery stores, right? All the things that it calls for an understanding, and in particular it calls for understanding in the domain of technology, because technology is especially modern technology, especially technology that's centered around the development of the internet, which is so novel in human history, that it demands, it calls out for some attempt of understanding. And I think this understanding cannot be given on these traditional modes of understanding technology that is afraid of them as Frankenstein's monster, right? That has either the dichotomy of, well, it's not us, so we don't need to worry about it, or it's going to take over the world, right? And it's us versus the machines, right?
That's a very reactionary, and I don't think that most reasonable people are sitting there. I mean, everyone's afraid of the zombie apocalypse. They're not afraid of the rise of the machines. In terms of their crazy what to be prepared for thing, I think everyone's pretty on board with, yeah, hey, technology's awesome. Do you feel the opposite? Do you feel that people are thinking that Terminator's going to come true in 10 years?
I think a lot of people are very skeptical of the possibility of artificial intelligence. But artificial intelligence is exactly aimed at the point where, people. There's tons of people on Facebook. People use Facebook all the time, right? This is a way the technology affects their social lives in a profound way, and it's revolutionized sort of social behavior. People work with that all the time, and they think that that's distinct from the question. When will machines take over, right? Anytime you mention robots to anyone, their first reaction is to make fun of the inevitable war with machines that will eventually be started. This is part of the mythos of machines we all sort of have.
Well, I think that has to do with robots becoming more like humans, and I think it's a circular thing, and it's a fear that, you know, well, if they're going to be like us, they're going to be just as brutal, just as screwed up, they're going to go to war, they're going to, you know, and that's really what the whole, like, mythos and the whole Asimov, all that stuff really came about, is it's really just, you know, it's Star Trek, it's just, you know, a way to, you look at something that's attempting to be like humans so as to better understand human nature. That's the storytelling angle on that, and that's why I think a lot of people in jest, and some maybe vaguely serious, are kind of take that angle of, oh yeah, robots, oh boy, they're gonna turn into, they'll be just like us, won't they, and then they'll start killing us just like we do to each other already,
right,
you know?
But there's a deep ignorance here, right? And it's the ignorance, and the machines have already taken over. Facebook is an example of the machines having taken over, and Facebook doesn't look anything at all like
Well, sure, but people still decide to use it or not use it. I mean, what way has it taken over? In what way is Facebook dictating something? I mean, I get an invitation to something on Facebook, and it tells me, hey, you gotta agree to give me all your information so I can do this thing, and I'm like, fuck that, and I hit cancel.
Facebook has profoundly affected social lives. I mean, it's less so for people of our generation. People who are in their late 20s. If you're under 25, if you went into college when we graduated college, people were using Facebook, and it took over, and everyone of that generation and younger.
Generation Zeta, huh? the Z-gens. If we were Generation Y.
I mean, are we Generation Y? I have no idea.
I think so. I like to think so. But yeah, I know what you mean. Okay, well then, yeah, that's, you know, kind of in full circle, comes back to what we were talking about originally, about not understanding what's going on in a commercial right now.
Right,
you know, it's
right.
I get what you mean. Yeah, I don't get, you know, it's the net speak. It's people texting each other, even though they have a phone where they could have a conversation with memes and shorthand that in some cases makes some sense, but in other cases it just leads to utter confusion for, you know, old folks like
me.
Right,
right. I mean, but this is part of the point, that we've already had the war with machines. The machines won, and there was. And there,
well, I don't know. Did we have a war?
Yeah.
or did we just use the machines?
We can't even tell we lost.
It's a Kaiser Soze kind of thing. I mean, you know, the biggest trick that the machines ever pulled was that they pretended that they didn't win the war already, huh? I don't remember there ever being the war. I mean, I just don't. I mean, were typewriters like?
It was a bloodless war. The same way Reagan defeated the communists for.
Well, okay.
Reagan and Rocky together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Reagan, Rocky, and Bush won. No, I get you. I guess, but I mean, that to me seems like kind of an overwrought stance. I mean, you know, like if you look at that connections program that you're so big on, we've had technologies that we've been learning to use, and people have been developing, and I haven't seen it yet, but there's apparently a couple really. Interesting documentaries out. One is more about the ad agencies and stuff, which is a different kind of element of human psychology. But another one has to do with design and just, you know, building
the documentary,
you know?
By the Helvetica guy?
Yeah, it was the one the Helvetica guy made.
Have you seen Helvetica?
I'll check them
Helvetica
both out here at
excellent.
Some point.
It was very, very good. You would enjoy it.
Yeah, because I'm interested in all that stuff from sort of a cinematic standpoint in terms of, like, you know, set design and everything.
Hey,
but
hey,
getting back to that...
Do you have a cell phone?
Yeah.
Do you carry it around with you all the time?
Not usually, but I have it with me now, just
even though
my signal
out
here is zero.
Anytime you're out of your room. Do you have a cell phone?
Not always, actually. And I actually have, like, a quarter bar. I mean, I'm a bad person to talk to because... Maybe I'm the perfect person to talk to with you about these sort of things because I still live in the woods where, you know, we don't get good cell signals. And we have Wi-Fi in our house and everything. But I feel like technology and design and everything, it's all been made by people starting with the way, and I don't feel like there was ever a war. I feel like it was always a symbiosis. I mean, certain technologies didn't take. I mean, Betamax didn't take, 8-track didn't take, and for whatever reasons, it was probably primarily a design reason. It could have been a cultural site. MySpace has got defeated, lost to Facebook, if you will, right?
That's right.
And what is that? What is that? You know, is that technology
fighting
itself?
No, technology dies. This is something
for sure.
People don't.
But people kill it, right? If people can kill the technology, then haven't they won the war?
Sometimes people can kill technology. Sometimes technology dies of its own accord. It's just not successful, or it doesn't reproduce in the right sort of way. It doesn't take off.
Well, for the consumer to consume it, right? You know, for people to use it. If no one uses the technology and it's in the woods, does it make a sound, right?
You have a Blu-ray player, right? Blu-ray survived. HD DVD did not survive.
Yeah, exactly. I was smart enough to wait on that. And that had a lot to do with porn, which, there you go, you get into human desires already, and you're back to the internet now.
Right. This is obsolescence. Obsolescence is when machines die.
But that has to do with consumption, right? I mean, it has to do with whether people use it or not, whether it works, whether it functions.
Those are two
us.
Completely different things. Whether it works and whether we use it are two completely different things.
That's right, but at the same time, it gets to the issue of, if the machines won the war, why are they the slaves?
They're not the slaves.
But people, for the most part, like, quit using something like MySpace because it became less user friendly, and they now are using Facebook, even though it's perpetually less user friendly. But I see your angle. Yeah.
That doesn't mean they're slaves. That means they're symbiotic with us. That means they rise or fall based on us, just as we rise or fall based on them.
Based on their usage. But yeah, but we're still going to be around whether or not Facebook exists. I don't have an internet.
Facebook goes away and humans are still here, but humans aren't here like we are here now. Right?
Okay. So the same way that once you had a saddle and everything else. Okay. You're back to the cave at a certain point.
That's right.
So you got to get to first principles for what it is to be human, but that is kind of not really what you're interested in anyway. So who cares there, right?
Right. So the idea is just that, look, there's technology around us. We need to understand it. And we don't have any proper resources for understanding it. The only resources we have are the resources that you're defending, which is that we have control over it.
Well, I'm not considering that a resource. I mean, I'm just sort of, and the only thing I'm even taking umbrage with, even slightly, is this idea and I think you're just using it because, you know, it's probably a good tagline to sell a book or something. But I mean, this idea of the war between humanity and technology, I don't see it. I don't get it. And so, yeah, obviously you have to understand how to use technology, and I mean, I hate to use the other T word here, but tools, you know, the better equipped you are to understand how to use something, the better you'll be able to use it. At the same time, I don't know how a telephone really works when you get down to the nuts and bolts of it. I'm able to use it. Same with a computer and many other things. And are you basically lobbying for the fact that a properly educated human is going to need to, obviously they're going to need to be better integrated with or educated on how to use technologies, but what? I mean, does everyone need to become an engineering major?
No. In that sense, we do understand technology, right? We understand how it works. We can make a better mousetrap, right? We understand, right? But understanding how something works that's not everything about the technology, right? This is one of the big flaws about understanding machines. It's called calculating monsters. Just because you understand how a cell phone works, right? Just because you understand how Betamax works doesn't mean that you understand whether it'll be successful in a consumer market, right? Right. That's fucking up for grabs. You got to throw it out there and see if it lives, right?
It's a whole different animal.
Part of the point here is that machines aren't dependent on people. They're not dependent on their engineers. They're dependent on the whole social structure that holds them up, just like it holds up all of us, right? Because machines are part of us, right?
Yeah, and so here's where I'm still going to take issue. I just can't. it's all popularity contest, right? I mean, you know, Facebook versus MySpace or whatever. I mean, sometimes it's user-friendly aspects or whatnot. But, I mean, if the cool kids are using one, you know, if the hot girl's on Facebook but not on MySpace, then all the dudes are gonna go to Facebook. And that has to do with the hot girl and not with the technology. I mean, there's a lot of variables there, and a lot of it can have to do with the way that the technology is designed or redesigned, but usually you still have computer programmers, you still have people making a living, you know, like Bill, you know, our good friend Bill, who will probably actually listen to this podcast.
This is like a 3-hour podcast. We're marathoning it right now.
We're just about at 2, and I'm gonna have to do some editing, like when things fell apart there, but. And then it will seem like it was like an actually like things fell apart, but it's like, no, when the technology failed.
I cried a little bit.
I know. I was thinking about it. But yeah, I mean, I guess what I'm interested in is like a storyteller is how technologies, I don't know, they can create artificial barriers and stuff too. They can bring people together, but just as easily they can bring people together, you know, a bad signal can cut someone off at the wrong time. I mean, I don't know if you ever saw those ads. They were like a cell phone company ad where the guy would be on the phone with his cell talking to like, I don't know, talking to like the dad of this girl he was going to ask out, and then he would say something and then the phone would cut out and then he would think, oh crap, this guy just hung up on me.
I don't think I ever saw those.
And that was sort of... Well, the joke was basically just, you know, I mean, people can have, because there's no sense of tonality. I mean, like, right now, we're talking on the phone, so, like, I can gauge your attitude, and you can gauge mine. But, like, if you're just texting or whatever, I mean, and you, I think, like, you're talking about Generation Zeta, as there will forever be known on this podcast, is all about that now, and you hear all their dramas. But they texted me, you know, and it's like, oh my gosh, wow! I guess the technology has beat that generation, maybe. But I don't know. You take it away from them for a week, and maybe they'll have to learn how to actually talk to each other.
Right. I mean, machines use us, and we use machines. And
well, where is the great What are you talking about in terms of, you just think that the ignorance is that people are not aware of the fact that they're using the technology, or that what is that great ignorance there? I mean, because I put it to you, should everybody have a mandatory, you know, year worth of electrical engineering classes? And you don't seem to think that that's at all really what's important. Then what is the, I guess, what is the solution to make people, I mean, not so afraid of the robot apocalypse, which I don't really think anyone is
No one's afraid of it. But when they think of when they think of robots, when they think of intelligent machines, that's what they think of. And they don't think of things like Google, right? Google understands what you are talking about and it can find things for you, right?
People are getting kind of savvy to that, though. They're getting kind of cynical even about Google. I mean, there's all the jokes, you know. Half the comedians nowadays have got that joke for Generation Zeta about, you know, the Google, did you mean, you
right.
know? It's thinking for you. It points it out to you that it's doing that for you, you know? So I think people are a little more savvy than you're giving them credit. I mean, you can always point to the masses as this giant, you know, amalgamation of groups and say that they're not that smart, but...
No. I'm not saying that people aren't smart. I'm saying that the resources that we have for talking about technology and the way technology affects our lives are very impoverished.
So what does that mean, the resources? What kind of resources should we have?
I'm talking about sort of conceptual resources, the way we understand technology. And I want to say we understand technology in the ways that we've been talking about, right? In this, either it's out of our control or it's this sort of fundamentally different sort of thing from human beings. Human beings are different, right? And I think these ways of understanding technology are impowered. They can't.
So basically, they can't account for
our real world things about the way the technology affects us. The way that cell phones have changed social behavior, right? On the views that I'm calling antiquated, that I'm objecting to. You can't really talk about cell phones affecting social behavior, right? Because they're social behavior, and that's something that happens between human beings. It happens between, you know, the meeting of the minds between two people, and machines can't get in on that, right? That's a sort of domain, that's a social domain that's blocked from them, right? They can't be social creatures.
Well, but I mean, certainly you can see how the limitations of that technology can affect the quality of that conversation through that you know, through that technology. You know, it's illegal to have a cell phone in the state of California without a wireless thing. So if you don't have one and you still are using it, like I will occasionally, and you get a call and you're driving, you're going to be rather curt and quick because that's illegal. If you're having a bad signal, if you're trying to, I don't know, if you're using emoticons or whatever kind of stuff, and it can't spell that out, who knows?
Well, so here's an example. Earlier you defended the children. You spoke out against violence in movies on behalf of the children.
I spoke out for on behalf of violence in movies.
For the sake of the children, though, right?
Yeah. I was like, there needs to be more violence in movies for the children.
Right? Won't someone think of absolutely the minimal violence content they get? Right. So this is one of the ways that we talk about technology in the public domain, right? This is the politicians, right? Hillary Clinton had the big speech about, oh, we need to be stricter about video game violence, right? So that's something, I guess. But that's not, that seriously does not account for the effect that video games have on people generally. I mean, independent of violence, who cares about violence? What about just the fact that people play fucking nonviolent Mario Brothers games all day long?
Or the fact, yeah, the people are devoting their time to these technological escapades.
Right, and the industries that are cropping up around this new form of entertainment, right? And the way that it changes economic and social and political and international models, affects models of property rights, the property issues that arise because of World of Warcraft or fucking your Xbox dollars or whatever, right?
yeah, it's all virtual, but
right,
these things are
all connected to the existence, just the sheer existence of these things that we call video games that sit in most people's houses, right next to their TV, the other idiot box, right? And these have profound social effects.
Well, there are many, but
these have profound social effects on human behavior at all levels, from the individual level to the social level. The only way that this complex and big discussion takes place in the social discourse is over video game violence. Right, and what does that have to do with? That has to do with a particular sort of moral view about what matters to human beings. That violence is bad, and that we should train our kids with violence. Right, this is a completely humanistic discussion. This is a discussion that's centered on what's special about human beings and what we care about with respect to our human beings. Right, there's places for that discussion also in the much larger picture, but those things are entirely blocked out because you're not looking at the technology as such. You're not looking at the existence of the object. You're looking at
the ramifications of the content.
Right. Ramifications for human beings. Right. And that's
That's all we can do as humans is be concerned.
Right. But that's such
with
a
what,
minor
I mean,
discussion.
You know, do you
that's
want,
such
do
a
you,
minor discussion? Well, right? And part of the point of science, part of the point of science, I want to say, is to take the discussions out of just what we think and our intuitions and what we happen to care about because we're the kind of creatures that we are, and ask actual questions about the world. Right. It looks to us from our perspective that the sun goes around the earth. But if you understand what's going on, you realize that that's not the case. And it's important that we get that. That's what science gives us. Right. And part of the claim here is that science can talk about technology at an individual level. How is this machine made? You know, what techniques did we use to make it? What programs does it have? But that's not the full discussion. Right. That's only the discussion of the stuff that we have control over. And there's a much bigger discussion to have about technology than just.
And you think that's within the realm of science?
Sure, because it's something.
Do you think that's something? Well, you think that's, well, in order for science to be proper, you have to be able to follow the method, which does require control.
So,
otherwise, you're talking about pseudoscience.
You're getting into
sociology and things and psychology and things.
That's science broadly construed. Science broadly construed just in the sense that we want to have clear and thorough explanations of things, right?
Sure, but
the scientific method
is
a way of coming to, right? But it's really just about stating hypotheses and seeing what counts against them and what counts for them and weighing the evidence. Right?
Well,
but clear thinking and building it, right? All I'm asking for is that we think about technology. I think we.
You just want rational discussion based on theory and then.
Right, and I think a lot of robot films are antithetical to this purpose because they cast it in this very what matters is this anthropocentric question, right? The fourth Terminator movie is about a former human being who becomes a robot who still has these human tendencies, right? And what is the story of this former cyborg human, right? Well, okay. I mean, who cares? This is why The Matrix is a much better movie. The next one we should do The Matrix movies. You should watch the second two movies. And, you had dinner called on you a long time ago, though, so if you want to go.
Yeah, I it's fine. I mean, where do you feel? Do you feel like we talked about Evil of Skynet, I guess, or we kind of danced around it and probably did get to it, but it sounds to me like this issue of resource, which is still interesting to me. You want scientists, presumably coming from the hard science, computer science scientists. That would be the institution from the academia that would be delving into this field, or would it be
artificial intelligence? Philosophy. Artificial intelligence suffers from a lack of theory.
Okay. And where does that theory arise from? You want it to arise from rational discussion and scientific
Well,
method?
I mean, almost all of cognitive science, almost all of the studies of the brain sciences started as philosophical questions that got put in a way that scientists could actually handle and then go out and conduct their experiments, right? This is why we have, right? Robotics was a big discussion from the, 40s to the 70s in philosophy. And then suddenly we eventually had the computer resources, the computing power, and the grasp of the science behind it to actually start implementing some of these ideas and raise some of the questions in a rigorous way that philosophers sort of...
And now we're at the place where they it sounds like they're doing studies that are relevant to your line of inquiry, and they're generating scholarship and conclusions such that,
right.
I mean, your big claim that everyone is impoverished, it just sounds like the information just isn't all there yet. I mean, not that it's all going to be there, but it sounds like it's just an emerging field.
Right.
So,
no, that's right.
People are gonna get smarter,
right,
about it as there becomes more there to talk,
right,
about.
No, that's
I mean,
right. That's right. And when I said artificial intelligence is suffering from a lack of theory, I mean theory at a big level, at a level that changes the discussion. Did you read that New York Times article that I sent?
Was that with something else? I probably didn't. I didn't read it. I'm sorry.
In the notes, I had a link to.
Oh, okay. No, I thought that was like a citation on something.
Oh, yeah,
I'm
no,
sorry,
no,
I didn't read that.
No problem. But it's just a classic example of how the public discourse on this is not up to the level it needs to be, and it's also not being facilitated by a coherent sort of vision in artificial intelligence that gives a sort of alternative narrative to technology. Discussion of technology.
Well, that will come.
Yeah,
though, it sounds like. It sounds like as they do more of this
research,
that other narrative will come. Right now, we have the horror story stuff from, we have all of that other crap, and that's kind of what people use. I think there's a lot of tongue in cheek to that, though. To be honest, I mean, I think people are pretty pro technology.
No, I think that's right.
Sure.
So the point of that article was that artificial intelligence is back in fashion, right? So the idea was it was in fashion in the 80s and the early 90s when the first Terminator movie came out, and then it sort of fell out of fashion for, I mean, the second Terminator movie was 1981 for almost 20 years, right? That you really didn't see.
Yeah, perception is reality was big with The Matrix, and that was 99.
Right, but that wasn't really an artificial
13th,
intelligence story.
Had...
Right? That wasn't a story about smart machines as much as it was about perception is reality and all these sort of philosophy.
Yeah. Okay, I gotcha.
But the idea is that of the article is that artificial intelligence is back in fashion, and this is certainly right. The way that they're conducting experiments is good. The artistic community is responding to this very much, not only in the entertainment industry, but also MIT has a bunch of media labs that work on exactly these sort of social questions about social robotics and interface design for how we interface with the machine, all this kind of stuff. And it's all going in the right sort of direction. I still think that there's an overarching narrative here that reevaluates our discussion of technology that's missing from this sort of field of science.
You think that narrative or that line of inquiry or that thinking is missing from the group of
I think it's not
that created this robot study that you just cited.
I think they weren't thinking the right way about it, but that they weren't being explicit about the implications that this has for for our understanding of technology, and especially for the popular discourse. I think the popular discourse is not keeping up because there's no... you see this on Colbert and fucking on talk shows all the time, the astronomer guy that works for NASA, or who's an astrophysicist who goes around talking about space and, you know...
Yeah, the guy that has a show on
Neil deGrasse Tyson, right? And he's really awesome, right? Science needs popularizer figures, Carl Sagan, Stephen Hawking, right? Who go out there and take high-minded scientific concepts and present them to the world in a way that
somewhat consumable,
consumable, but also calls into question and clarifies and reevaluates lots of unquestioned assumptions or sort of popular misconceptions about the way that the world works. And I think technology is desperately in need of this. I think
so. It needs a spokesperson or an idol singer or something.
Right? Not a spokesperson, but it needs a coherent narrative that can be popularized in the right sort of way. I think the scientists don't know how to do this either. I mean, popularizing science is one of the big challenges of the next century.
It always has been, and it always suffers from the fact that you really can't do it and do it right. I mean, you can post the conclusion, you can post the question, you can post the conclusion, you can say, look here for the results, and be confused if you're not, of the group. You know, if you don't have the education to understand it, then most people just don't and
right.
won't. Thank you.